Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Stations WBAI in New York, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFK in Los Angeles, and community radio station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. The newscast is produced by Monica Lopez and Simba Russo. Headlines editors are Randy Zimmerman and Nell Abram. Our DC editor is Mitch Jeserich. Our technical production team is Jade Paget-Seekins, Pauline Bartolone, Mick Mylan, and Eric Klein. Special thanks to Transbay for web services. Free Speech Radio News is a worker-run collective. For more information, you can visit our website at www.fsrn.org. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
Hi, this is Joan Jett from the Blackhearts, and you're rocking with WUSB Stony Brook 90.1. Yeah!
And I couldn't have said that better myself. It's 6:01, and time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. Before we start the music, all right, I just want to say something. Okay, you know, they said it last week. There's no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They're giving up the search. It's over. All right? Fine. No weapons of mass destruction. But, you know, the president was right in saying that we still did the right thing. We still went into this country to invade them without you know, that particular reason. All right, we don't have weapons of mass destruction anymore to use as an excuse. We don't have the fact that, you know, he was going to invade another country. All right, there's no evidence of that either. There's no evidence of him collaborating with Al-Qaeda or planning an attack on the United States. Look, he wasn't a very nice guy, okay? And if that's not reason enough to invade a country, I don't know what is. It's like fiber, you know, a little bit of conservatism a day makes you healthy or something. I think it improves your sense of humor. I don't know. But yeah, it's true. The search for illicit weapons in Iraq has ended. The White House confirmed on January 12th that the search for the banned weapons it had cited as justifying the war that ousted Saddam Hussein has been quietly ended after nearly 2 years with no evidence of their existence. You know, the thing that really amazes me is that it's not a big deal. Apparently, most people don't seem to care. The fact that it was all based on lies, you know, which is what people have been saying for some time. Yeah, the rabble-rousers have been going around saying it's all based on lies. But here's the proof. They're saying now, yeah, we had no evidence. All that talk before, just nonsense. Disregarded. So that means the conclusions of an interim report last fall by the leader of the weapons hunt, Charles Duffler, will stand. That report undercut pre-war administration contentions that Iraq possessed biological and chemical weapons, was building nuclear capability, and might share weapons with Al-Qaeda. However, and this is the thing that amazes me, the White House is insisting that the war was justified. Thing is, you know, there's nothing left. There really is nothing left. They've had all the reasons for invading Iraq one by one be dismissed. And no, you cannot say the world is better off now because Saddam Hussein is not in power. No, that doesn't hold. That's not true. What, the world is better off with 1,500 less of our citizens who were sent over there under false pretenses? We're better off without them? Ask the families. Ask them if we're better off without them. Is the world better off without, 100,000 Iraqis that have been killed based on conservative estimates? No, I don't think we're better off for that. And are we better off now that every other car in Iraq is blowing up and policemen are being mowed down? And God knows what's going to happen for this quote-unquote election coming up. We've turned a relatively, and I'm not saying this was a nice place by any stretch of the imagination, but it was relatively peaceful. There weren't massacres in the street. There wasn't a civil war going on. Yeah, there was a dictator. And that kind of sucks when you have a dictator. But it's really up to the people to deal with that. You know, like they did in Romania, they ran around and chased the Ceausescus and eventually just killed them on TV so everybody could see that they were dead. You know, it was kind of barbaric, but they dealt with it in their own way. And somehow I think if the United States had invaded Romania back in 1989, it wouldn't have gone as smoothly. Anyway, so we have a big mess now, and for some reason, the president just gets away with it. I don't understand. Someone please explain this to me. Clinton has you know, some kind of affair with some kind of an intern, and the country grinds to a halt, and everybody's talking about this, and his job is on the line. This guy lies, sends people to their deaths, is responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands, if not more, people in foreign countries, and basically has catapulted our reputation into the ground, where it's going to stay for quite some time. What we've done tonight, as kind of a public service, and also as kind of a history lesson, we're going to revisit what George Bush said in a couple of his radio addresses. This first one we're going to listen to, I believe, was in February of 2003. Yeah, February 8th, 2003. This is President Bush's radio address, and it was concerning Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. And let's just listen to what he had to say. The facts that were presented. And I'd like you to pay attention. Pay attention to everything that he says. And ask yourself, as he's saying these things, if it's true or if it's false. And it's a lot of fun. It really is. We're doing this for entertainment purposes. Because people need to be cheered up. February 8th, 2003. President George W. Bush on the radio.
Good morning. On Wednesday, Secretary of State Powell briefed the United Nations Security Council on Iraq's illegal weapons programs, its attempts to hide those weapons, and its links to terrorist groups. The Iraqi regime's violations of Security Council resolutions are evident. They are dangerous to America and the world, and they continue to this hour. The regime has never accounted for a vast arsenal of deadly biological and chemical weapons. To the contrary, the regime is pursuing an elaborate campaign to conceal its weapons materials and to hide or intimidate key experts and scientists. This effort of deception is directed from the highest levels of the Iraqi regime, including Saddam Hussein, his son, Iraq's vice president, and the very official responsible for cooperating with inspectors. The Iraqi regime has actively and secretly attempted to obtain equipment needed to produce chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons. First-hand witnesses have informed us that Iraq has at least 7 mobile factories for the production of biological agents, equipment mounted on trucks and rails to evade discovery. The Iraqi regime has acquired and tested the means to deliver weapons of mass destruction. It has never accounted for thousands of bombs and shells capable of delivering chemical weapons. It is actively pursuing components for prohibited ballistic missiles, and we have sources that tell us that Saddam Hussein recently authorized Iraqi field commanders to use chemical weapons, the very weapons the dictator tells us he does not have. One of the greatest dangers we face is that weapons of mass destruction might be passed to terrorists who would not hesitate to use those weapons. Saddam Hussein has long-standing, direct, and continuing ties to terrorist networks. Senior members of Iraqi intelligence and al-Qaeda have met at least 8 times since the early 1990s. Iraq has sent bomb-making and document forgery experts to work with al-Qaeda. Iraq has also provided al-Qaeda with chemical and biological weapons training, and an al-Qaeda operative was sent to Iraq several times in the late 1990s for help in acquiring poisons and gases. We also know that Iraq is harboring a terrorist network headed by a senior al-Qaeda terrorist planner. This network runs a poison and explosives training camp in northeast Iraq, and many of its leaders are known to be in Baghdad. This is the situation as we find it. 12 years after Saddam Hussein agreed to disarm, and more than 90 days after the Security Council passed Resolution 1441 by a unanimous vote, Saddam Hussein was required to make a full declaration of his weapons programs. He has not done so. Saddam Hussein was required to fully cooperate in the disarmament of his regime. He has not done so. Saddam Hussein was given a final chance. He is throwing away that chance. Having made its demands, the Security Council must not back down when those demands are defied and mocked by a dictator. The United States would welcome and support a new resolution making clear that the Security Council stands behind its previous demands. Yet resolutions mean little without resolve. And the United States, along with a growing coalition of nations, will take whatever action is necessary to defend ourselves and disarm the Iraqi regime. Thank you for listening.
Oh, it was my pleasure. You know, I didn't realize till listening to that just now how much he sounds like that character Dale from King of the Hill. It really does. Listen to it again and just close your eyes, and it works. It really does. Okay, but not to belittle it, because he is the president and this is serious. What we did was basically take them at their word that, yes, the war is still justified. You know, despite the fact that the weapons of mass destruction never existed and are not an issue. So what we did, and this is something that we did as sort of a favor to the Bush administration, we took this speech and we just, you know, in Orwellian style, got rid of the parts that weren't true. All right. So you can listen to the speech now and hear the real reasons, hear all the justification, all the falsities, all the bad evidence. It's not there anymore. So what you're about to hear now is that same speech, except these are the words that remain that are true.
Good morning. On Wednesday, Secretary of State Powell briefed the United Nations Security Council. One of the greatest dangers we face is that weapons of mass destruction might be passed to terrorists who would not hesitate to use those weapons. This is the situation as we find it. 12 years after Saddam Hussein agreed to disarm, and more than 90 days after the Security Council passed Resolution 1441, by a unanimous vote. Saddam Hussein was required to make a full declaration of his weapons programs. Saddam Hussein was required to fully cooperate in the disarmament of his regime. The United States would welcome and support a new resolution making clear that the Security Council stands behind its previous demands. Thank you for listening.
Okay, well, yes, it is a bit shorter, but it's more to the point. The United States would like for Saddam Hussein to do all kinds of things, but if you look at what's written, you know, it's, you have to cross it all out because it's all false. It's all false. All right, we have one more speech, and this happened in March 22nd, 2003. This was after after Operation Iraqi Freedom had already begun. So the invasion is in progress at this point, and George W. Bush is explaining the motivation behind it. And again, what we're going to do here is fix it so that all the inaccuracies have been removed and so that we have a clean version, an accurate version. But first, let's hear the way it aired on March 22nd, 2003.
Good morning. American and coalition forces have begun a concerted campaign against the regime of Saddam Hussein. In this war, our coalition is broad, more than 40 countries from across the globe. Our cause is just, the security of the nations we serve and the peace of the world. And our mission is clear, to disarm Iraq of weapons of mass destruction, to end Saddam Hussein's support for terrorism, and to free the Iraqi people. The future of peace and the hopes of the Iraqi people now depend on our fighting forces in the Middle East. They are conducting themselves in the highest traditions of the American military. They are doing their job with skill and bravery, and with the finest of allies beside them. At every stage of this conflict, the world will see both the power of our military and the honorable and decent spirit of the men and women who serve. In this conflict, American and coalition forces face enemies who have no regard for the conventions of war or rules of morality. Iraqi officials have placed troops and equipment in civilian areas, attempting to use innocent men, women, and children as shields for the dictator's army. I want Americans and all the world to know that coalition forces will make every effort to spare innocent civilians from harm. A campaign on harsh terrain in a vast country could be longer and more difficult than some have predicted. And helping Iraqis achieve a united, stable, and free country will require our sustained commitment. Yet whatever is required of us, we will carry out all the duties we have accepted. Across America this weekend, the families of our military are praying that our men and women will return safely and soon. Millions of Americans are praying with them for the safety of their loved ones and for the protection of all the innocent. Our entire nation appreciates the sacrifices made by military families. And many citizens who live near military families are showing their support in practical ways, such as by helping with child care or home repairs. All families with loved ones serving in this war can know this. Our forces will be coming home as soon as their work is done. Our nation entered this conflict reluctantly, yet with a clear and firm purpose. The people of the United States and our friends and allies will not live at the mercy of an outlaw regime that threatens the peace with weapons of mass murder. Now that conflict has come, the only way to limit its duration is to apply decisive force. This will not be a campaign of half measures. It is a fight for the security of our nation and the peace of the world, and we will accept no outcome but victory. Thank you for listening.
Okay, and that was President George W. Bush's radio address of March 22, 2003, with justification for the invasion of Iraq. Let's see if that talk loses any of its weight when we eliminate all the inaccuracies.
Good morning. American and coalition forces have begun a concerted campaign against the regime of Saddam Hussein. A campaign on harsh terrain in a vast country could be longer and more difficult than some have predicted. And helping Iraqis achieve a united, stable, and free country will require our sustained commitment. Across America this weekend, the families of our military are praying that our men and women will return safely and soon. Millions of Americans are praying with them for the safety of their loved ones and for the protection of all the innocent. And many citizens who live near military families are showing their support in practical ways, such as by helping with child care or home repairs. Our nation entered this conflict, and we will accept no outcome but victory. Thank you for listening.
Well, it does lose something, doesn't it? Yeah, it's not a whole lot there. I think if he gave that talk, you know, back then, with all the facts, all the real facts, if he had given that argument to Congress, maybe more people would have had the guts to stand up and say, this doesn't sound right. This doesn't sound like good enough reasons. And, you know, the text is all online. All this information is at whitehouse.gov, bless their hearts. And if you see anything on there, the text, all these speeches are on there. If you see anything there that was eliminated, that shouldn't have been eliminated, please let us know. We'd like to know if we got any of this wrong. But we tried to keep as much in there as possible so that, you know, we'd at least have a few sentences. And we just had to cut out the things that were not true. For instance, so just to give you an example in the first couple of paragraphs. In this war, our coalition has brought more than 40 countries from across the globe. Well, that's misleading because 40 countries are not going into this war anything more than a skeleton force of representatives. I don't even want to call them troops. Our cause is just, well, I don't know about that, the security of the nations we serve and the peace of the world. No, not really. Not really. Sorry. Our mission is clear. That's got to go, too. To disarm Iraq of weapons of mass destruction? No, no, no. To end Saddam Hussein's support for terrorism? No proof of that either. And to free the Iraqi people? Well, let's ask them what they think about that. The future of peace and the hopes of the Iraqi people now depend on our fighting forces in the Middle East. Come on already. They are conducting themselves in the highest traditions of the American military. Hello, Abu Ghraib. They are doing their job with skill and bravery and with the finest of allies beside them. That's kind of doubtful, too. At every stage of this conflict, the world will see both the power of our military and the honorable and decent spirit of the men and women who serve. Well, you know, pictures don't lie, and a lot of witnesses don't lie, too. It's not a good situation, folks. It's very bad, and I just can't believe that more people aren't outraged. You know, if he had had sex with somebody, okay, then people would be all up in arms and morally outraged. I think this is worse. I think this is a whole lot worse. Going to war for reasons that are completely false. You should be held accountable for that kind of thing. Yet I don't see anybody, including people on the other side, whatever that might be, who are doing this, who are actually speaking up and raising their voices a little bit. You know, I'm hard-pressed to find people who are going to the inauguration, you know, to protest. And yes, okay, I'm a big hypocrite because I'm not going either. I've got my own reasons. I've just been traveling a lot lately, and I just feel kind of worn out. And yeah, I admit it. Because most people I know are not going, I don't really have the enthusiasm to go either. And after what happened to me in the summertime, I'm not really, you know, all that enthusiastic about getting into a similar situation in another city, which could happen. But I'd like to know, you know, the bigger picture, why so many people don't seem to be going down there. They just kind of have given up. And that's wrong. You can't give up on something like this. You also can't keep resorting to, you know, what the left, the curse of the left, with all its infighting and idealistic idiocy that never allows you to move forward and actually get something done. I'll give you an example, all right? I'm on a whole lot of mailing lists, a whole lot more than I want to be on. And many of those mailing lists involve discussions of various sorts. And someone came up with the idea to bring a bunch of eggs down to the inauguration on Thursday and throw them at the presidential limousine when it goes by. Throw a bunch of eggs at the limousine when it goes by. Well, I mean, you know, I think that's a great idea. I really do. No one ever got killed by an egg, all right? It's a good way to express your feelings. But boy, the arguments that started on this mailing list. How can you throw eggs when there's people starving in various parts of the world? And that's a completely bourgeois thing to do. You can't just gather eggs and throw them because then someone else got into a big to-do because, well, are these eggs going to be free-range chicken eggs or are they going to be from factory hens? I mean, come on already. First of all, the eggs are not going to the starving people regardless. Second of all, you know, you take a beautiful gesture like throwing eggs at a limousine and you turn it into something ugly like taking food out of the mouths of people. That's, come on, that's not what this was about. And that's why things don't get done, because people aren't willing to take a stand and maybe offend somebody. So I don't think any eggs are going to be thrown on Thursday. And that's sad for all of us. It really is. You need to see uprising. You need to see people expressing anger, because there's a lot to be angry about. You know, this isn't about somebody sleeping with an intern. This is about people going off to die for no reason at all. And if you think it's going to end anytime soon, you got another thing coming. You know, who's going to replace all these people? Here are two examples. A mechanic with 9 years in the army, including a role in the assault on Baghdad, has refused to return to Iraq, claiming, quote, "You just don't know how bad it is," unquote. And I know I don't know how bad it is, even though I talk about this. I don't know how bad it is. And I don't think very many people listening do. Sergeant Kevin Benderman, 40 years old, said he became morally opposed to war after seeing it firsthand during his first Iraq tour. Now he faces a possible court-martial after failing to deploy Friday with his unit. "I told them I refused deployment because I just couldn't go back over there," he said on Wednesday. "If I'm going to sit up there and tell everyone that I do not believe in war, why would I go back to a war zone?" So now he's facing all kinds of legal action. There's other people that are doing similar things. And, of course, who's going to replace all the dead and the wounded that, you know, come back here and can't serve again? Because there's, you know, 1,500 dead, but how many wounded? How many people have lost limbs? How many people have maybe not had physical injury, but mental trauma like you just could not believe? Like this guy, for instance, a 19-year-old Marine from Cirrus, California, shot and killed a police officer and wounded another before dying in a weekend gun battle. Investigators said he may have been driven by a desire to avoid returning to Iraq. Andres Rea was scheduled to report back to Camp Pendleton near San Diego 2 weekends ago. Instead, police said he went out with a semi-automatic rifle and drew officers into an ambush outside a liquor store in Cirrus, a town about 35,000 next door to his hometown of Modesto. Raya's mother told the Modesto Bee that her son came back different from his last assignment, which included service in western Iraq's insurgent hotbed of Fallujah. In speaking with family, they conveyed to us that their son did not wish to return to Iraq, said Lieutenant Bill Hine, spokesman for the county sheriff's department. The ambush was recorded by a security camera outside the liquor store. Raya was shot and killed after a three-hour search. Basically, they say he walked into the store, was pacing around, acting strange. He walked back outside, fired a shot with his rifle, went back inside, telling employees he had been shot and to call police. And as soon as he saw the officers, he immediately engaged in gunfire with them. It's very evident he was intent on engaging these officers in gunfire and that he was not concerned with the bullets that were going to be flying in his direction. So that's, you know, some of the results of war that you might not be aware of. Yeah, the United States might dominate militarily, but look what it's doing to our people. And then this today, Iran. Yeah, now George W. Bush has his eyes on Iran. He said he would not rule out military action against them for who knows what reasons this time. They're replying by saying the military, they have the military might to deter attacks against it. That's according to the defense minister. Ali Shamkhani, he said the Islamic Republic, which has seen U.S. forces topple regimes in neighboring Afghanistan and Iraq in the last 3 years, did not fear attack. We are able to say that we have strength such that no country can attack us because they do not have precise information about our military capabilities due to their ability to implement flexible strategies. We can claim that we have rapidly produced equipment that has resulted in the greatest deterrent, he said, without elaborating. And of course, you know, all this is a result of Iran having a nuclear program. Now, you know, at some point you have to say, why not? You know, after all this insanity of invading countries left and right, toppling regimes, starting wars, you know, maybe a nuclear deterrent is needed to stop these lunatics. At what point? At what point do you stand up and say, you know, I'm with the other guys now? You know, I think they're right to defend themselves against your idiocy. How do you express that? How do you show your support for that? Well, you know, maybe going to Inauguration Day and voicing your opinion in some way is one way to do it, but certainly voicing your opinion every single day of the week in other ways is needed. And boy, we have never needed people more than now to stand up and speak out. And it's not going to stop, you know. This lunacy is certainly not going to be ending anytime soon, especially if we keep giving him a free pass. Not just one person, the entire structure of the administration right now. They're out of their minds. Out of their minds. Condoleezza Rice today on the hot seat. Of course, it doesn't mean anything. She's going to get the job no matter what. It's depressing. Yeah, it's very depressing. And when you see all the things that are happening around us, you see all the rights being taken away, you see all the surveillance. Look at this. You have a New York gang member facing a trial as a terrorist. Well, you know, gang members aren't the nicest people, but now saying that gang members are terrorists, and as a result being able to use the Patriot Act against that kind of criminal, it seems like a step in the wrong direction. You have... This is a weird one. Utah fans are upset that police responsible for security at the Fiesta Bowl used 50,000 volt electric devices to zap fans trying to storm the field after the win. Yeah, Arizona State University spokesman Keith Jennings said the use of the weapons was in line with the department's use of force policy. That policy allows officers to use electronic incapacitators anytime a subject is involved in a physical altercation with an officer. The officers used the weapons at the Sun Devil Stadium, and this is a quote, in part to protect the goalposts and the field. Do you remember on those rare occasions when, you know, the Mets used to win pennants, everybody would run out onto Shea Stadium on that final game. It was fun. What's happened to us? Electric shocking. I mean, it's all related. It's all related to this insanity that our country has been plunged into. And, of course, you have all kinds of behavioral monitoring, such as in the metro. If you want to have some fun, go into the Washington, D.C. metro this week and just start, you know, looking around, walking slowly, you know, not making eye contact with people, and, you know, appear to loiter, look Middle Eastern, that always helps. And you'll see how the regime has changed. You'll see how people are coming down hard on anything that could be interpreted as one day maybe being suspicious. And then, of course, the moral turn to the right that this country has taken. Randy Moss, all right, this is a football player in the NFL, was fined $10,000 for a controversial celebration. All right, basically, about a week or so ago, he pretended to pull down his pants and moon the Green Bay crowd during a playoff win last weekend. He didn't do it. He pretended to do it. But apparently, in this day and age, even that kind of a gesture is enough to elicit outrage. I mean, you know, other countries, they would actually do something like this and people would get through the day. But, you know, where are we going here? Where are we going? Your actions were based on poor judgment, did not reflect well on you or the Vikings, and were insulting to many. That's from Pete Hadhazay, the league's director of game operations. They have resulted in widespread criticism and needlessly detracted from Minnesota's dramatic playoff victory. Fans should look to you and your teammates to see how to compete and win in football. But when you lose your focus on playing and engage in sideshows, as you did on Sunday, you forfeit much of this. It's enough to make you laugh, but you have to wonder how much more can this possibly get insane, you know? Words are completely failing me on this. And not only that, there's a story behind the dance that this guy did. The pantomime pants pulling was a response to Green Bay fans' tradition of mooning the visiting team's bus in the parking lot. You know, and completely blown out of proportion. I just got back from Canada, and of course, up there, everybody's a whole lot more laid back, and these things don't matter. You know, people can express themselves, people can be controversial, and they get through it. They get through life, they get through whatever conflicts they might have. And of course, I was in Europe before that, and it's just the same there. Much more laid back, much more sane. And we have to get in that direction here. We just have to, or it's going to be, it's fodder for a talk show host, I'll say that, but it's really going to be a very unpleasant place. All right. Hey, we have a special guest here today. Slick Zero has visited us all the way from New Jersey. Welcome to WUSB.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
And I should point out, too, that our show is abbreviated tonight. We have a basketball game coming up in just about 10 minutes, so I'm sorry about that, but I had to rant and rave a little bit, and I don't know if we'll have time for phone calls, but we do have time for letters. People can write to us, otw@2600.com. So, Slick Zero, you do radio, too, except you do a different kind of radio. You want to tell us what that's all about?
Yeah, I stream on DDP Hack Radio now. It's a new show there called Basenet Radio.
You said hack radio, so
yes, it's all hacker based. So it's very loosely based on hacker. This was started up by Stank Dog and the Digital Dog Pound. On their website, they have
I believe he's written for 2600.
Yes.
Okay, and there are a number of different hacker related radio shows.
There's about 15 or 20 of them
15?
In the schedule and grid, and there's and they have content all day, all night long, constantly going on their stream on rotation.
Wow, that's. And when is your show on?
My show's on 8:30 on Tuesdays.
That's tonight. Wow, so that's only about 2 hours from now. Show is on. Okay, what's the website?
The website would, my website is basenet.slickzero.net. That's the number zero, and the website for Hack Radio is binrev.com.
Okay, well, it's good to know there's other people doing radio shows out there now. Now, I think we're the only ones, though, that broadcast over the radio, right? All these other ones are online. But I mean, it's still radio, but it's a different kind of radio.
Well, I was listening to Stank Dog's show, BinRev Radio, recently, and he just found out that he was being rebroadcast somewhere.
That's great. See, that's what you can do. You can take these feeds and rebroadcast them onto your own station. And, you know, we get questions all the time from people who want to know if they can do this. And, yes, we welcome it. We welcome people rebroadcasting this program. I think we're even rebroadcast on that particular website, which is great. I think I have one here, in fact. Let's see. Yes. No, that was something else. I'm sorry. That was a critique. Well, basically, people are asking constantly if they can rebroadcast. Here we go. We're organizing a new computer news and information internet radio service called CNI Radio. We'd like permission to retransmit the archives of Off the Wall, Off the Hook, and The Fifth Hope. Signed, Jim. Well, Jim, consider this permission granted. And also, for everybody else, you don't have to ask permission. Just broadcast the show as it airs and say where it came from would be nice. And let us know about it. We'd like to know where we're being aired. And that's true of both Off the Wall and Off the Hook. And anything that is on our website, including Hope archives, audio archives of various sorts. Oh, we have a call. Should we take a call? We have a few minutes left. Let's see what people have to say. Yes, you're on the air.
Emmanuel.
Yes, how you doing?
Yeah, what's going on? I'm glad I got on.
Where are you calling from?
This is Earl in Connecticut.
Okay, what's on your mind?
About the smart cars.
Oh, yeah, I went up to Toronto, and I drove a smart car for the first time. It's so cool. It's so cool. I got to have one of these things.
Now, was the two-seater the one you were looking for, a little coupe?
Yeah, it's called the 2-4.
Okay, you may be in luck, because, as you know, they're Daimler Chrysler is the company there, and they actually showed a Dodge concept last year called the Dodge Slingshot, and it's a rebodied version of that car, I believe. That smart car that they're supposedly, possibly considering bringing to the U.S.
But it's not actually a smart car. It's something that Dodge would be making?
It's the same car. It's just stylized a little differently. It's the same company. It's Chrysler's that are Mercedes and everything else now. So those Dodge vans are now Mercedes vans, just rebadged. And the Chrysler Crossfire is just a Mercedes with a different body. So it's a similar type of thing, except it'll be a smart badge as a Dodge. It has the little, I think it's like a 1.3-liter engine cylinder.
Yeah. Well, do you know what kind of mileage it gets? Or would get?
Very high.
Yeah, okay, because this one gets, I think, 70.
Yep, I believe that's it. I think it's a diesel engine.
Diesel engine, 70 miles per gallon. The gas engine gets 60, but I think they only sell the diesel up.
All right, it'll be supposedly brought here, and the other rumor is they may actually bring back the Plymouth brand as a youth-oriented brand, kind of like Toyota did with Scion, and just have a couple cars, and that maybe would be one of them. If you do a Google search for Dodge Slingshot, you will see the first thing that comes up, I think, is a Daimler Chrysler page, and there's a picture of it, and then you go to smart.com, and it's pretty much the same car with a different nose.
Just to point out, we do have a basketball game coming up in about 7 minutes, and part of the advantage of that is that occasionally Matt Mankiewicz comes into the studio, and he has done so today, and he has something to say about these smart cars. Matt?
Actually, yes, and I'm sure you're familiar with what the plans are for the smart brand, is that the original smart car, the two-seater, which they now call the Smart for Two, probably will not make it over here, and one reason why is because there are people, different countries' definition of safety and emissions and whatever, but the second model in the Smart line, the Smart for Four, which has been announced in Europe, is on sale. That will make the trip over, I believe, but the real thrust of the Smart marketing plan will be a small SUV type of vehicle based on the for Four called the Four More, F-O-R-M-O-R-E.
Four More.
It's 4-2, F-O... I mean, this is actually a play on words that Ford did way back in the days of the Model T. The four-door was called the F-O-R-D-O-R, four-door, and the two-door was called the Tudor, T-U-D-O-R. So, I mean, it's... this goes back 70, 80 years, but in any case, the Smart brand will actually make it across, and I believe the plans are to build the Four More, at least for the U.S. market, in Brazil, which is kind of a play on what they've done with the Mini Cooper. The factory's owned by BMW, it's based in England, but the engine is made in Brazil by a Chrysler affiliate. Oh. So when you buy a Mini Cooper, you are not buying a BMW.
It doesn't sound like you're buying anything American either.
No, you are not. But here's the other funny thing, and this is something I like to run by both of you guys. You know that most of the European countries, European Union in general, have signed the Kyoto Treaty, correct? Okay, that the tax system in England for cars these days is based on the amount of CO2 emitted. And if you open up Car Magazine, which you can find at a rate local Borders of Barnes & Noble, and sometimes even some of the indie stores too, you will see that they will list the CO2 emissions in grams per grams per kilometer, okay? And that's where the tax is based. The diesels emit less of it. Now, the diesel engine in Europe is considered a green engine because of that, while over in the States, it's considered a very dirty engine, and why, I mean, emission control standards are at the point where you can barely get a diesel engine in any car in the United States, and particularly in California. The Mercedes diesels, I don't think, are even available there.
Yeah, I don't think you can license a diesel car in New York or California.
Yeah.
Any comments, listener?
No, I believe that Brazilian plant also produces engines used in Hyundais, or it was supposed to be anyway.
Entirely possible, because what's happening with the so-called globalization that's been going on is that, well, you know what the easy way to check the origin of your car is? The first character of the VIN number.
You can usually decode it from the VIN. The manufacturers usually have it in there.
Okay, the first character.
Yep.
One is United States, two is Canada, three is Mexico, okay, which accounts for most of the cars sold under American names in this country.
Yep.
S is England, W is Germany, Z is Italy, which only means Ferraris, V is France, okay, and J is Japan, obviously.
Well, wait,
I forget what Korea is.
Why is that one obvious? Everything else doesn't have a single letter. S is England, Z is Italy.
Engine
yeah.
Tranny, too. From the VIN code.
Yeah, but particularly
like
where the bulk
and things like that.
Yeah, the final assembly plant indicates is the first character of the VIN.
Fascinating. Well, I'd love to continue this discussion. We should do a car show, but thanks for your call.
Okay. Take it easy.
I plan on getting one of these things one way or another, although it's right now the hassle I'm getting is that I need a Canadian license to buy it. I need a Canadian license to buy it or to insure it. And if someone knows different or knows a way around this, please let me know, because I'd certainly love to proudly drive one of these 2-4 smart cars down the New York State Thruway and have everybody pointing and looking.
And they definitely will, because it looks like a phone booth on wheels.
I mean, they point and look now, but they'll have something else to point and look at. The car, yeah, it does look like a phone booth on wheels, but a very sturdy one. It does well in collisions.
Well, one reason why it does so well in collisions is because when they first put it out, they had handling problems with it. So it's
don't knock my car, right? It's got what's called a nut encasing. Where basically, if it's a very hard steel shell. And you just kind of bounce around.
But it is a great innovation, because it does enable other manufacturers and subsequent models to be designed that way, with greater attention paid to handling.
All right. Now, Matt, are you ready to go on in 2 minutes?
In about 2 minutes, yes.
Okay, so we're going to go out. And sorry for the abbreviated show this week. However, we will be back with a full show next week. And Slick Zero, I want to thank you very much for... just drag the microphone back over. Okay, there we are. Thank you for coming all the way out here from New Jersey. You came out actually to look at our equipment, because you didn't believe me when I told you how old it was.
Yeah, this looks like it's from the 60s.
I think it is from the 60s.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how we're able to make things work. A great testament to the people who keep things going here. A lot of people here are much younger than the equipment they use.
That's believable.
All right. And with that inspiring remark, we're going to say goodnight for tonight. And again, if you want to write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. It's Emmanuel Goldstein. We'll see you next week.
Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón, me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel. Pa' una ciudad del norte yo me fui a trabajar, mi vida la dejé entre Ceuta y Gibraltar. Soy una raya en el mar, fantasma en la ciudad. Mi vida va prohibida, dice la autoridad. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino por no llevar papel. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón, me dicen el clandestino, yo soy el quiebraley. Mano negra clandestina, peruano clandestino, africano clandestino, marihuana ilegal. solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley, perdido en el corazón de la grande.
Welcome to another night of Stony Brook Seawolves basketball. But before we start the hoops, we have, of course, our usual special treat called Athletic Direction. And Jeff Bernstein, Ben Battanti are on this floor of the Indoor Sports Complex, ready with Athletic Direction. And then in about half an hour after that, the pregame show for Stony Brook Seawolves basketball. Right now, here's Jeff.
Thanks a lot, Matt Mankiewicz, and welcome to another edition of Athletic Direction, joined by my counterpart, Kurt Hilton. We are counterparts, but we never see each other.
Exactly. I'm surprised you're still speaking to me after Saturday.
Well, I tried to console you the other night, but I didn't get the reciprocal back. I didn't get, you were probably celebrating. And
oh man, what a nerve-wracking ending to. And we're talking, of course, Jeff, the biggest Jet fan I know, and me being a Steelers fan. It was funny. My family was divided, my sister being a Jet fan as well. So,
yeah, just an incredible, incredible loss that I'm still basically getting over right now. But welcome to Athletic Direction from the Stony Brook Sports Complex, a place where I'm not very much here. I don't come to this place much. I'm on the road a lot for Stony Brook Seawolves games. Today, the Seawolves women will take on the Binghamton Bearcats, the SUNY rival, and should be a very competitive game. We got a little coach's corner tonight. Going to have Coach Megan Bryant, the softball coach, will be on for a couple of minutes, and then we'll have Andy Ronan, the track and field coach here at Stony Brook University. Jim Fiore will join us very soon. And we're now talking with head coach Megan Bryant of the Stony Brook softball team. And Coach, good to see you.
Good to see you, Jim.
Coach, it's that time where it's a couple weeks before the season, starts, and talk a little bit about this year's team and what you foresee with the team in 2005.
Well, we're very excited about the upcoming season. We have a real season team coming back. We return 12 players, including our entire starting lineup. As always, the Americans have been very competitive, but our goal is going to be to win it here on our home field in May.
Coach, obviously the America East Tournament is here this year at the Stony Brook University, like it was 2 years ago. Is that sort of a motivating factor going into the season, knowing if you could basically control your own destiny on your own home field?
Well, it is a motivating factor. I think that we have been a good home team over the course of the last few seasons. The main motivating factor for us, I think, for this season is our four seniors. They're really fired up about the season. They want to go out with a bang, and I think they're going to be the driving force.
How much of an impact, Coach, does hosting the American East then have on potentially recruiting? Does it have any impact at all, knowing that, for instance, you're going to have your postseason tournament at your own facility?
Well, I think it can only help recruiting. I mean, it's a plus. It's especially a plus if we can have local players come and watch us play. It's something that we can use in our media. We can promote the program with that, and so it can only help. Something like that can only help our team.
Usually, people talk about a five-year plan, and I guess you'll be going into your fifth year in 2005. Can you sort of give us your assessment of where things are now in comparison to where they were when you got here?
Well, I think we've come a long way. I think that we've had to work hard, like every program has to, and it takes some time. I know that when we came in, I was really committed to doing it with young players and not doing the quick fix route with Jason and things like that. And we really wanted to build for the long term. I think we've been able to establish ourselves as one of the top four teams consistently in the Americas.
We're also joined by Athletic Director Jim Fiore. And, Jim, good to see you again on Athletic Direction.
Great to see you guys and lady. Glad for coming to my show. Can I speak now?
Speak anytime you want.
I'm just kidding. I welcome you, Megan, to the show. We do Athletic Direction periodically throughout the men's and women's basketball season, so it's great to have a spring sport on. I think you're the actual first coach we've had on, other than non-administrator faculty type. So welcome to the show. I'm curious, you know, you've seen a lot of change in the department since your arrival several years ago, and I do commend you for doing a great job that you've done with the softball program, and obviously expectations high you have for the program this year. Can you just talk a little bit about two things before we get to the team? First of all, can you talk about the transition of the university since your arrival, and how that may or may not have affected recruiting, and how that plays into recruiting, and two, the dramatic changes on staff that have taken place, and just talk about the overall change in the culture of the athletic department, if you could.
Sure, Jim, and thanks again for having me on your show. I'm probably the only coach still in the building, but that's all right.
No, we got Andy Ronan coming
except
in. Except
so. Basketball coaches, and they're a little busy. The campus changes since I've been here have been tremendous. I think that we've really done some great things, not just with our athletic facilities, obviously, but across the campus. It's become more attractive. We've always had the opportunity to sell quality academics to our recruits. And that is just huge for us. But I think the campus itself, you know, the spirit, everything is really coming together for Stony Brook. And it's only going to get better. You know, as far as our athletic program, everyone's excited about the direction we're going. Everybody's working hard. And I think the best is still yet to come for everybody.
I appreciate that. What people don't realize is Megan has a very high-achieving academic team. One of our top in the league. In a sport in softball that is very high achieving generally across the league, the programs in the league and two, but within our 20 teams we have, softball is one of the high achieving programs. Why do you think that is? Why is softball generally a sport that attracts high academic kids? Because it doesn't seem to be an anomaly that softball program in Stony Brook, it's very similar to the rest of the league. Maine has a very good academic team, and I'm not going to use the A word or the other B word here, but other schools in our conference are strong academically. What do you attribute that to, the strong academic profile of recruits and kids on your team?
Well, first and foremost, student athletes that we look at, we're looking at academics first. And in return, they're looking at Stony Brook first. We have students that have chosen Stony Brook for the health sciences with a pre-med major, things of that nature, so that certainly helps. I think the American East as a whole does well academically. In softball, and I think one of the factors with softball is it's a very suburban sport, and I think that plays into it as well. But we're really proud of our kids and what they accomplish in the classroom, and they go out and get it done. We obviously have good academic support services here, but really they're intrinsically motivated to go out and do the best that they can in the classroom and on the field.
I would say so. And since you played, and in your playing days as an athlete growing up in Westchester, can you talk about the evolution of strength and conditioning and how that affects your team and the importance of that plays into softball?
Yeah, I think there's been a big difference in that, Jim, and I'm older than you, and you can go back and notice the differences in that. But, I mean, back in the day, 20 years ago, we ran and did some push-ups, but it was nothing compared to what the student-athletes have at their disposal today. Our team, especially in the last 3-4 months, has gotten stronger, faster, quicker, which is incredible in that short period. When recruits are looking at schools, that has to be right at the forefront of what they're looking at as far as their support services. And our staff here, David Van Dyke and Tina, do a tremendous job.
In looking at your program from last year, you had ballpark favorite 5 or 6 recruits from California. Now, I would imagine that's a recruiting challenge in getting people to come. I mean, California overall has the top youth athletic programs and so forth in the United States, and I mean, you read time after time about all sports being funneled, through California. How were you able, and what was the linchpin part of your recruiting pitch that got so many people from the West Coast and a Sunshine State to come to the Northeast?
A little crazy, especially today when it's about 15.
Absolutely.
Don't get crazy. It's 14.
I mentioned earlier, we really felt we had wanted to jumpstart this program. We do have good local players, but there's some very find softball played in California probably the best in the country. So when we had an opportunity to recruit West Coast players and they were interested in Stony Brook, I had a jump at it. I think culturally it's a nice match. I think the California players like New York. They like to be for Stony, you know, the ones here at Stony Brook like to be close to New York City and still be in a suburban setting. So it really has gone well. And you will see a lot of Northeast, successful Northeast schools that have a lot of Californians on their roster.
How's the I'm curious. How's the quality of Long Island compared to New York City softball? Is it comparable?
Long Island and New York City?
Comparatively. High school.
Comparing the two?
Yeah.
Long Island's stronger.
Long Island's from Suffolk County or Nassau County?
you're from Nassau? Nassau County.
No, it's, you know, it's interesting because, like, for instance, in a basketball context, in men's basketball, New York City is still a recruiting hotbed for talent, yet Long Island is really not. I mean, you don't have a lot of big-time players coming out of Long Island, and even the ones that have come out in the last few years, Jason Frazier from Amityville and quite a few others a few years ago, Bobby Hodgson from William Floyd, they struggle when they get into the dynamics. So it's interesting to find out that it's more of a suburban sport, because baseball in New York City is still huge.
Yeah,
in terms of recruiting hotbed.
I mean, I know in the women's sports, you know, basketball is still big in New York City. And the tough thing with softball is it's gotten very much like soccer with travel teams. The travel teams cost money. You know, and so that's why we term it a quote-unquote suburban sport. And there's good talent on Long Island. You know, there's just a lot of competition. You want to talk about the A word, the B word. We got the H word over in Nassau. And, you know, they're a well-established program, so... You know, quality Long Island players on our team. The best player in our roster is from Farmington High School. So, you know, they have made their mark. We have a nice mix, I think, right now in our roster.
Coach, season's going to start in a couple weeks. Where do you see yourself in the picture of the America East? Obviously, you know, you'd like to try to win the America East, which would be great, especially the year you host the tournament. Where do you see your team realistically this year in terms of the conference, and who are the strong teams?
Well, Jeff, I think that Maine has to really be a favorite. I believe they lost one player from the team that won the tournament championship a year ago. Boston's always tough.
Right.
Albany lost a lot to graduation, but they're always real competitive. And I put us right up there. I think that those are the top four teams in the conference. When they go to the preseason rankings, I think any one of those four teams could be 1, 2, 3, and 4. And, you know, and the other teams in the conference are probably coming back stronger, too. So it's going to be a tight race. And, you know, the big thing is to get there for that weekend, because anything can happen.
Yeah, I noticed a couple of years ago here at Stony Brook, very competitive games, especially against Maine. Then you went up to Maine last year. What were the differences between playing here at Stony Brook in the tournament 2 years ago and then going up to a place like Maine last year? And the differences playing on the road in the tournament versus hosting the tournament?
Well, it was a longer ride to Maine than it was to the University of the Field, I'll tell you that. And, you know, when we first played in it 2 years ago, it was our first time in postseason play. We were a young team, and we were kind of, you know, happy to be there type of thing. Last year we went in to Maine, Maine's a tough place to play. We won our first game. You know, we were one game away from the finals. We gained a lot of experience, and I think more than that, our kids left that tournament last year saying wait till next year, and that's what we're hoping.
Isn't it in softball, the arm, the pitcher is such a key position, obviously. How do our starting pitchers compare versus a Maine or whoever won the league last year, which is Maine? But how do we compare? Do we have an elite pitcher? Do we have very good pitchers? I mean, can you just talk about the importance of pitching?
I think our pitching staff is solid. Angela Andrews set a school record of 20 wins last year as a sophomore. She comes back with a lot of experience. You know, really have ground ball out pitchers. We don't have the big K's right now. We have a good offensive team and a good defensive team. So it really has to be a team effort for us to do well, pitching, defense, and of course, scoring run.
Great. Before we move on, I have to ask the question we ask everybody. What would you do if you were the athletic director?
Give that softball coach a long-term contract.
Enough said.
At least an honest answer.
Thank you for your time, Coach.
Not an honest answer.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Megan. We're going to send it back to Matt Mankiewicz for about a minute or two. He updates us in the world of sports. When we come back, Andy Ronan, track and field coach at Stony Brook. You're listening to Athletic Direction on WUSB.
That's not true.
Thank you very much, guys. Matt Mankiewicz here in the studios of WUSB. Let's check out some of the headlines that we'll be following throughout this broadcast, particularly once the game gets underway. And for starters, well, let's see. Will Roger Clemens throw another pitch for less than $22 million? Do the numbers add up? The Astros think it's a bit dear. He's asking for $22 mil. The Astros, maybe a little bit more than half that at $13.5 million. I mean, he has won seven Cy Young Awards and whatever, but the Astros did lose a shot at bidding for Carlos Beltran because of budgetary considerations. And you wonder where these negotiations are going. Ravens defensive coordinator Mike Nolan has made it official. He has accepted a five-year deal to coach the San Francisco 49ers. And it's not considered official until he actually signs something. But for the moment, it is done. He is the son of Dick Nolan, who coached the 49ers between 1968 and 1975. He is the fourth father-son combination in coaching in NFL history. Bum and Wade Phillips, Don and Dave Shula, and the Jim Moras. Is he a junior? Nope. He's a George W. Bush. Different middle name, I believe. But he does like to go by Jim Mora Jr. anyway. The NHL Players Association has invited the NHL to meet without the top officials. Board of Governors will be involved, and Trevor Linden, the president of the NHL Players Association, will head it up. Bob Goodenow, Gary Bettman, out of the discussion in the proposed deal. Now we're going to send it back to Athletic Direction with Jeff and Kurt.
Thanks a lot, Matt Mankiewicz. Welcome back to Athletic Direction here at